Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Text 82. Yes? That's on the board. Tatraikagramana Dhiro. Govinda Charanam Bhujam. Vimukta Sangano Bhajan. Bhaktya tat samyatam agat. Tatraikagramana Dhiro. Govinda Charanam Bhujam. Vimukta Sangano Bhajan. Bhaktya tat samyatam agat. Tatra, there, eka agra mana, with full attention, dhira, sober, govinda, of Krishna, charana ambujam, unto the lotus feet, vimukta, freed from, Sangaha, material association. Ano bhajan, continuously engaged in devotional service. Bhaktya, by pure devotion. Tat, with the Lord. Samyatam, qualitative equality. Agat, achieved. Translation, having undergone austerities and penances at Kapilashrama, King Prachinibhari attained full liberation from all designations. He constantly engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord and attained a spiritual position qualitatively equal to that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There is special significance in the words. Last line. Tat samyatam agat. The king attained the position of possessing the same status or the same form as that of the Lord. This definitely proves that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a person. In his impersonal feature, he is the rays of his transcendental body. Interesting sentence. Not the rays are his rays, but he is the rays. When a living entity attains spiritual perfection, he also attains the same type of body known as Sachit Ananda Vigraha. This spiritual body never mixes with the material elements, although in conditional life, the living entity is surrounded by material elements, earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and ego. He remains aloof from them. In other words, the living entity can be liberated from the material condition at any moment, provided he wishes to do so. The material environment is called Maya, according to Krishna. Daivahiyeshu gunamayi mama maya dharatyaya mamivaye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. This divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. As soon as the living entity engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he immediately attains freedom from all material conditions. Sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. In the material state, The living entity is on the Jiva Bhuta platform, but when he renders devotional service to the Lord, he is elevated to the Brahma Bhuta platform. On the Brahma Bhuta platform, the living entity is liberated from material bondage and he engages in service of the Lord. In this verse, the word dhīra is sometimes read as vīra. Actually, there is not very much difference. The word dhīra means sober and vīra means hero. One who is struggling against Maya is a hero. And one who is sober enough to understand his position is dhīra. Without becoming sober or heroic, one cannot attain spiritual salvation. King Prachini Bari is in the fast lane. As we discussed yesterday, earlier in the section, his situation is not flatteringly described, attached to Karmakanda rituals. Behind that attachment, we see that there is a very qualified person, and through the association of Narada, that other attachment became swiftly cleared and the path of devotional service opened. Mahatsevam dvaram ahur vimuktes, in the language of the Bhagavatam. Dvaram means gate, like it is said that the entrance into Vaikuntha requires passing through seven gates. The seventh gate is where Jai and Vijay were. So in, for example, the construction of Sri Rangam, they have seven gates. And you know, the gates are huge. There are these big archways and maybe simultaneously, you know, a whole group of people can pass through that archway. And there's seven of them. There's walls and there's gates, so you can only go through the gate. And then seven of them before you can get to the temple. Indicating, you know, the temple is Vaikuntha, and outside Vaikuntha is where the gates are. They're called dvarams. So the Mahat Seva, association with transcendental personalities, is the Mahat Seva, rendering service to the Mahats, the liberated souls, is the dwaram for mukti. Same messages here. Because of the dwaram, or the gateway of Narada's association, it led King Prachini Bari to that seventh gate, the gate of devotion, and he went for it. We heard yesterday he went to Kapilashrama, it's mentioned in this verse also, Ganga Sagara, and the first line of the verse indicates, or the translation, having undergone austerities and penances at Kapilashrama. Now, there's nothing in this verse that speaks of austerities, but it mentions its reference to the previous verse, tapase. The point is that with devotional service, there is tapasya. Tapasya, austerity. And there's different ways of thinking of tapasya. There's the impersonal and there's the personal. The impersonal is maybe you've seen pictures. I was visiting a Govinda's restaurant and they had a little reading room in the front of the restaurant, like Prabhupada indicated, to get people to read Prabhupada's books, kind of like a bridge to you know, from coming to take nice vegetarian food and then learning something about Krishna consciousness. So they had on the table these picture books, kind of like that anybody can look at and feel not threatened. And part of the picture book was yogis undergoing very severe austerities. One picture was a man, a yogi, in the heat of the summer with a ring of fire around him, sitting there enduring the heat of the summer by making it hotter. No fans, no AC, just in the middle of a ring of fire. Turn the page, then in the middle of the winter, in Gangotri, the mouth of the Ganga. Ice everywhere, floating around in ice in his little pool. Was a yogi with his head tilted back and his beard floating on the ice-cold water, you know, undergoing that austerity. Increase the heat of the summer, you know, float in this freezing cold water in winter. Then it turned the page, and then there's another picture of a yogi lying on a huge, bigger than his body, cactus slab with these big prongs sticking up, lying with his back down on the cactus slab with his, like, you know, little basket next to him. People want to make a donation, they can make a donation. Many years ago, this is just, you know, severe austerities that are, according to the language of Bhagavad Gita, parching the elements of the body is austerity in the mode of ignorance. I was on a mission for the GBC, so I was visiting the Meenakshi Temple. What's the city? Madurai. Madurai. And as I was going towards the temple, I saw what looked like a statue, but it wasn't a statue. It was a teenage girl who was standing out in the middle of the day with a trident stuck through her tongue, you know, caked blood in the top and the bottom, you know, so she, you know, with the thing stuck through your tongue, you can't withdraw your tongue, so the tongue is parched as an austerity to please Lord Shiva. And I went by and I went back, is that a statue or is that a person? And she blinked, you know, so it's to please Lord Shiva. Kind of like Prikasura. So those are other kinds of austerities. Austerity doesn't mean, tapasya doesn't mean it has to hurt. Tapasya means foregoing something of the senses for, you know, engaging the senses in a higher purpose. Our austerity includes congregational chanting of the holy name. And other kinds of austerities include fasting from beans and grains at Ekadasi, or further kinds of austerities on Ekadasi, or the appearance days of the Supreme Lord or his great devotees, and so forth. Those specifically mentioned in Prabhupada's purports, these are Vaishnava austerities, because they're recommended because there are auspicious days and we undergo that tapasya, that austerity, for a purpose. Control the mind, control the senses, and most importantly, increase hearing and chanting. In any case, undergoing tapasya, tapo divyam, not the other kind, but divyam kind, putrakayena sarvam shudyat. It helps to make one's consciousness purified. Not radical, artificial, extreme, painful, but principle-based in that which brings our mind more to the personality of Godhead. Just one passage from Tattvasandarbha that I'm reading, there's mention of the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam mentioned in other Puranas, where it says specifically, it was very powerful statement, one who remains awake all night long before the deity reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam will surely return to the spiritual world with his entire family. You know, there's other kinds of glorifications like that. Chanting of the holy name. You know, devotees sometimes do this in some places. On Ekadasi, they spend the night with kirtan, or kirtan and reading, and kirtan and reading, or, you know, there are different options that one can select from to develop an increased level of austerity. But the essence of that Vaishnava austerity is strengthening one's hearing and chanting. So that's the first part of the verse. King Puccini Bari underwent austerities and penances at Kapila Ashram, and Govinda Charanambujam, he took complete shelter of the lotus feet of Govinda, Eka Agra Mana, with full attention. You can't give full attention if there's material desire, because material desire is going to, you know, wiggle or dance or make some noise, or, you know, bring your attention to that, whatever it is. Kind of like, you know, a car with a horn. Beep, beep, you know, so you have to pay attention. Beep, beep. Or, you know, so many signals of a flashing light, or, you know, police car, whatever it is, you know, an ambulance, something that's to catch your attention. And desires are like that. They just catch your attention, and they catch your attention. They, you know, takes the attention away. So it's with full attention, or chanting inattentively can be made possible only when one's consciousness is pure. Otherwise, one will chant inattentively. And the inattention is the root of all the other offenses, because it has to do with a material conception, and our attention goes to someplace other than Krishna because of a material conception. And we want happiness, so we go there, or there, or there. Or at least the mind contemplates those things. Now, two other things. Then I'm going to keep this class this morning short. Two other things. What's the ultimate goal on any practice? And here it's the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And when there's the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, then full purification comes. But supposing someone doesn't know about the form of the Lord, or Satchitananda Vigraha, or the absolute truth as a person, but they have a spiritual inclination, so what's going to happen with them? Well, something will happen. There's at least in the direction of mode of goodness. And, you know, then some other kind of in the language of Bhagavatam, vimukta maninas, thinking that one is liberated. Manina, within the mind, thinking oneself liberated. Thinking oneself beyond the influence of duality. Certainly that's the notion within Buddhism, the Eastern conception of opposites, duality, yin and yang, and, you know, going beyond, because there's misery as soon as there's some enjoyment. It's just how the place of duality works. And as if one wants to be sure that one will have a miserable life, then strive for material happiness, because the duality feature is going to be there. It's for sure and certain. Therefore, what? Become desireless. Just get a dagger out and stab desire till it dies. Then you're liberated. No more misery. The Vaishnava conception is that's not possible, because desire is concomitant with the soul. So what's needed is, in our position is very simple. Direct desire towards the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. That's devotional service. That's what it is. Govinda Charanambhujam. With complete attention. Eka agra mana. Manaha. Then anubhajan. Anubhajan is continuously engaged in devotional service. Bhajan and anubhajan. Bhajan is devotional practice, and anubhajan, following continuously devotional practice, uninterrupted devotional practice. Not, no vacation. I remember hearing a lecture. It's really graphic. Prabhupada was saying, there's no vacation from devotional service. I have a few years older sister. I have three sisters, but one of them, we grew up and spent a lot of time together. She wanted to know, you know, when are you going to retire? And I smiled and said, I retired when I was 20. She laughed. But we don't take a break from devotional service. It's just devotional service. And so Prabhupada's lecture was, the mind, our dear friend, has this tendency to accept and reject, sankalpa vikalpa, acceptance, rejectance. It's one of the core functions of the mind, acceptance, rejection. And he detailed, the mind makes a plan. I think I would like to enjoy da-da-da-da-da-da, the plan making of enjoyment. And even as that's going on, there's this modifying of the plan. Well, maybe not like that, maybe adjust it over there, and it's endless, accepting, rejecting. So one may take up devotional service and think, well, you know, I've really worked hard, I think I deserve a break. And Prabhupada's point was, it's not that then, a little pause, and you say, okay, a little bit of Maya, please. He said, no, immediately, Maya's there. As soon as you turn your attention away from light, there's no delay. Darkness is there. Immediately. Therefore, devotees don't take a break. We may, from intense type of devotional service, we may take a hearing and chanting break. Or a, you know, intensification of hearing and chanting. Go somewhere that's kind of off the radar screen of what, you know, the routine of life. Go to a holy place, or go to some place in nature, or some place where it's just quiet and peaceful and not the routine. And again, focus, refocus attention upon Krishna by something, a project or hearing and chanting or something, in solitary or in association with devotees is even better. And then resume the routine of our, you know, our commitments according to our psychophysical nature. But not a break from devotional service, just varieties of devotional service. And then the statement is made that the verse, the words in the verse,
tat samyatam agat.
So Prabhupada starts the purport with those words. It's in the last line of the verse. One attains a position like Krishna's. Samyatam. Tat, that person. Samyatam agat. it's Vaishnava liberation. He doesn't use the language, but Sarupya Mukti or Salokya Mukti, a form like the Lord's or on the planet of the Supreme Lord, when it attains that. And he adds the point, well, this means, confirms the personal feature of the Supreme. This has to do with the goal. If you don't know what the goal is, if you don't know that the goal is attaining shelter of the Supreme Person, you're going to have another goal. If there isn't a spiritual goal, it's kind of varieties of sense gratification, this type or that type, or just, universal sense gratification. There's a Sanskrit term that's rather than specific type, just a Vishaya Sagara, just a mood of enjoying. The spiritual goal is, if you don't know the Supreme Person, it's get rid of misery. Then it becomes impersonal. But this is personal. Because he had Narada's association, he knew of Govinda, the personality of Godhead, and so he took shelter of his lotus feet. There's a nice verse when you listen to the recording of Vaisheshika Prabhu's class. Chakri, make sure you listen to his recording of his class. And everybody. He begins, the verse that's quoted is 2.1.10, where the chanting of the holy name is the doubtless and fearless path to achieve perfection. And so in the purport is glorification of the holy name. And then he started reciting these verses. He didn't identify where they're from, but they're from Namastakam by Rupa Goswami. And the first one says, one who takes shelter of the holy name comes in touch with the lotus, the tips of the toes of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord through his name. Just even at the beginning, the tips of his toes. How fortunate. Who can come in touch with the tips of the toes? If you have the toes, you have him, because he's absolute. Just through chanting. Very merciful process. Our consciousness is very covered, but the process is very merciful, accessible by anyone. When the goal is defined and the means to reach the goal are given by scripture and representatives of Krishna, then very quickly, compared to other processes, very quickly, one can attain the destination. So he attained that destination. It's said in the verse. He attained that destination. Because the goal was well defined and the means was well defined. And he was very determined. He underwent his austerities everything was there, and he attained very quickly that goal. Then the last point is the last paragraph of the purport. Prabhupada writes that in this verse, the word dhira, that's in the first line, tatrai kagra mana dhiro, this word dhira is sometimes read as, or in some versions of the Bhagavatam, as vira. A little academic comment here, very short. This is one of the arguments by scholars, impersonal scholars, is that the pranic literature has been interpolated. That's like a fancy word to say, people went in and messed around and edited them and changed them around. Interpolated. And this is an example for them, because some versions of the Bhagavatam say dhira, some say vira. Jiva Goswami points this out in his Tattva Sandarbha, that there are examples of this. There's one other example that he particularly points to, and it's in a very important verse. It's Vyasadeva's realization in trance, which is the basis of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. And the version that we have is Apashat Purusham Purnam. And some versions say Apashat Purusham Purvam. So the impersonal scholars go, aha! Interpolation. We can't, you know, dismiss the whole thing because, look at, there's these two different versions and we don't know which is the real one. And so it just shows it's a modern composition that's been interpolated over time. Case closed. To that, Jiva Goswami replies that Sridhar Swami, who was in the line of disciplic succession prior to Madhvacharya, chronologically he was before, he wrote commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, which we know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted as ultimate authoritative. With his own hand, he wrote that which was authoritative, and his rendering is Purusham Purnam, and here it's also Dira, but there's other versions. And whether it's, you know, the distinction is minor. And in the end result, it's the effect is the same. It's not a fundamental, principle-based kind of distinction because the import of both takes you to the same place. So it's a technical piece of information. And Prabhupada doesn't get into it here in the purport saying, you know, some people say blah, blah. He just says that there's two different renderings and they take you to the same place. Because there must be vira. Vira means hero, but also means strength. And one needs spiritual strength. And where do you get spiritual strength from? Well, from he who is the reservoir of spiritual strength. Balaram is spiritual strength. And to engage in devotional service, you need spiritual strength. Can't be successful without vira. And one who has vira is dira. Sober. Undisturbed. Mind undisturbed. So the conclusion is the same, although there's these slight differences in version. And I'm just making mention of this because not that any of our devotees have some doubt, oh, maybe Bhagavatam's been tinkered with. But you may hear in the course of your life of interacting with people, somebody has heard that and they've got their arms across their chest saying, harumph. So you should know, you know, what our Jiva Goswami, great Acharya, has to say. Prabhupada doesn't get into it so much. He just mentions it. Okay, so end there, see if there's discussion. Yes?
So it says, as soon as the living entity attains into the transcendental service of the Lord, he immediately attains freedom from all the material conditions.
From all what?
From all the material conditions.
Material designations.
Conditions. So it's, wondering for a soul, when it stops and engages in the transcendental.
When the soul does what?
Engages in the transcendental loving service.
Enters into the transcendental loving service?
Transcendental loving service.
When one enters into that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, does that, you know, if there is a lot of levels, steps, and what
type of... Oh, there's a lot of levels.
Yeah, so what type of, the service that the soul does, it, so it says like as soon as it enters, it gets freedom from the material conditions. Means like in the same time, in the same birth, or it will take a couple of births.
No, well, it depends. In his case, it didn't take a couple of births. The same body. And that's indicated in the purport. The soul that's covered by material elements can be liberated in this lifetime. It can be many lifetimes. It can be one lifetime.
So it depends upon.
Right. The potential is there, even within the body, to be a liberated soul in one lifetime. Anything else? Yes?
Arjuna, just tell me what a person is in this question that you began with. I mean, a lot of people who appreciate what we do at the university or Krishna House, and, you know, it's yay, 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 go, 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 I want to really be part of it until the personal concept of God comes up, and then they just can't resonate with that. And I'm not sure if this, we've tried so many different things, but how do we help them to go that next step? And it seems like a pretty large percentage. Is there something we can give them to chew on for some time until some purification happens so they can
there's many things. You know, bad experience with religion, dogmatism. You know, according to Bhagavad Gita, but you know why it's there is easy. You know, what to do about it is not so easy. Vitaragavaya krodha. In that verse, Prabhupada explains this impersonal is born out of frustration. Exactly what you just, the example you gave, frustration with relationships, and you know, in the case of authority relationships. So I don't want that again. Don't give me that one again. Two or three things come to mind. Speaking on sub-religious principles, you know, values, like, you know, compassion, and service to others, a lot of goodness things, values, and, you know, so that it's within their comfort zone, and, you know, gently being explicit that actually these are personal qualities. You know, just hint, without, here's Krishna, just, these are personal qualities. Where do personal qualities come from? Hint. You know, initially. Most effective, second, most effective is just the relationship with the person so that there's some trust between the, you know, the student or whoever is coming and the person who's guiding them, that's yourself and your wife, whoever else is also involved. based upon that trust, then it becomes easier to present, you know, where the train's going. Now so this is what I'm describing here is a soft approach as opposed to, you know, hard approach. Hard approach is an option. Maybe not so effective at a college situation. Soft approach. I think, you know, that the second item is the most important one. Meaning, you know, over time. So then on a one-to-one basis, it, you know, kind of titrating into their system an understanding of personalism. You know, like what I did with this Buddhist millionaire. They're a mother. And I said, you know, what's your relationship like with your daughter? Just like explored that. You know, there's affection for the daughter. And now, when your daughter expresses to you some gratitude, what does that tell you? What does it feel like? Is that something that's not just you receive something so you feel good, but you know, it's part of the cultivation of character within your daughter. Rather than just receiving, you know, in a selfish way, recognizing with gratitude the love that, and not just the objects, but the love that she's receiving from her mother that will help her in her adult life be able to have loving relationships with her children and others and her husband and whatever else is going to be going on. So then the intention was to extrapolate from that to, you know, the bigger picture. Something that's within someone's experience, what the nature of love, and love is connected to a person. So we receive so many things. Anyway. And it's really easy to just receive things and say thank you without really acknowledging the person. Just be polite. So we can talk about compassion and selfless service and, you know, being good. Now, when it take it down to a human level, then there's another person on the other side, who you're giving to or receiving from. Now let's go back in the bigger picture. Look at all the things that we're receiving, without which we can't even exist. Sunlight and water. We abuse those things because, you know, we're not acknowledging the person who gave them. We're just using them in a wanton, unguided way. So we can take some guidance from scientists that say you shouldn't abuse your environment. Because you're only hurting yourself, so you should not abuse the environment because then you're being good to yourself. You know, what's at the center? And where's the love? Where's the happy, the joy of so? Without, like, without force, just stirring a kind of thoughtfulness that leads one to gratitude for what we've received, appreciation from what those gifts are, and acting accordingly. So like impersonalists, they go, yeah, there's this force. We're receiving things from this big energy out there. That's good. It's much better than people that just grab and are greedy. Great. Now, is there... Let's just step back a bit and... Does energy come from energy? That's what I did with this lady. Yeah, it took a while. It took about 15 minutes. But energy is based upon energetic. Okay. So what's that energetic? It's a good question, isn't it? What's that energetic? What's the source of energy? Good question. The whole of Vedanta pursues that question. Okay, let's take that on board. It's not what I'm saying. What is it? And why is it that you want to reject what it might be if you don't know what it is? It's born of frustration, right? What's your variety of frustration? What's your favorite? What's the one that's driving you that says it can't be that? Just a dialogue. I'm not judging. Just, look inside and ask yourself, why am I did that. I became angry with Krishna when I started reading Bhagavad Gita. Then I looked inside and said, where's that anger coming from? I don't care who he is. If he's saying go and kill, I would the heck with Krishna. Wait a minute. It takes being thoughtful, not just knee-jerk reaction. Why is that? Where's that? Why is that knee-jerk reaction coming in? Where's the thoughtfulness? Don't push me, man. Or something. Okay. Some people don't have a problem at all. And that's nice to have an atmosphere where some people don't have a problem at all. And then some people do have a problem, and some people are thoughtful and overcome the problem. Anyway, your question is, what can you give them to chew on? So I think it's just, the trust in you as a person, that you're not going to twist their arm and bang them into accepting. You're not, it's not dogma. It's promoting thoughtfulness. And purification. If there's something that's blocking, what's that something that's blocking? Why is it something you can't even consider? Just can't be that. I don't know what it is, but I can't be that. What does that say? Supposing you have a conversation with somebody about something, and I don't know what the answer is, but I know you don't have the answer. You're teaching somebody how to make a chapati. So, I don't know how to make a chapati, but I know you don't know how to make a chapati. Well, watch. Here's your chapati. There's a science to this. What does that mean, science? It means anybody can experiment observations and conclusions. That's the science, right? So here's the experiment. If you say no without even experimenting, what's that? What's the block? This is dark and Machiavellian. It's age old. What's happening inside there? What's your frustration? Anyway. Yes?
I'm remembering that even that Ross Indemian was telling Sarvabhauma Vrata and here it's mentioned like there are different rings of Srimad-Bhagavatam. How do we reconcile these two?
If the answer is, Sridhar Swami is our authority. And he said Dira, so it's Dira. Now, there's somebody, people over there that don't accept Sridhar Swami like we do, and they say, no, it's Vira. And we say to them, our authority says it's Dira, so we accept it's Dira. But if you just entertain Vira, it works. It's not a contradiction. It doesn't, you know, change the meaning and the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can like Vira, and that's fine. We're very clear, it's Dira. But we're not going to, you know, quibble and argue over that. He's an acharya in the line of Madhvacharya, and he wrote commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. He was after Shankaracharya, before Madhvacharya.
So
what? I don't know a lot about his personal life. You can do some research and look it up.
So we can take that as an authorized
one. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, over and over and over and over and over again. And then following Jiva Goswami, you know, he would quote Sridhar Swami's commentary. But even the version of Srimad Bhagavatam we have is from that authority, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted that authority. And he's God. So we don't question. How do we know? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Another scholar that knows, you know, all these things. Yeah.
And you were mentioning the Buddhist, yin and yang, which is very big in the yoga world right now, and really infiltrating into the Buddhist.
Oh, yeah. Thing. Oh, yeah.
So this, like Vira and Vira can also be seen as the yin and yang, because, when you think of Vira, then they're, fight against Maya.
Yeah.
We think, there's a that quality of chivalry, or the quality of one can get very passionate about fighting with the mind or Maya. And then there's, on the other hand, Prabhupada is saying there's no difference between Vira and Vira, because one who is Vira is Vira, in the sense that he's sober. So I was just wondering how to balance off, one can get into a very passionate mode fighting with the mind, that spirit of Vira, but at the same time Prabhupada is saying he is very
dear,
sober.
Well, a short answer is the Daivyeshu Gunamayi verse. We can struggle against the mind, or we can take shelter of Krishna. That's really what Vira means. The hero is not one who passionately struggles against the mind. That person will be defeated. But one who, the real Vira is one who takes shelter of Krishna, then there's spiritual strength, and then the mind is conquered. The material energy is conquered, the whole thing becomes peaceful. Even in the midst of turbulence, one remains peaceful. That's Vira, that's the hero. He took shelter of Krishna. This kind of subject to discuss. With students that can be thoughtful. I mean, not like, the larger group, but a smaller group. Nice, very nice. You can poetically or graphically depict. And then say, which is the hero? I mean, that's nice. Nice.
Like a
Above what? Oh, yeah, okay. How did I resolve it?
Yeah, how you reconcile or how you process that moment.
Oh, when I felt this anger coming, I stepped back from the emotion and said, where's this emotion coming from? I mean, the next thing was, I'm just reading a book. I'm getting this, like, anger. Aha! There's an issue that I have with Krishna. I'm big and Krishna's small, so who's this small guy? I don't care, you know, it was an attitude. It was a relation with Krishna problem. That's where I need to address. What's my relationship with Krishna? Not like, what did Krishna say? When the relationship is right, then I can go back and look at what Krishna said, and then most likely, in this case for sure, understand better what Krishna was saying and why he was saying it. I was just reacting to a value that says, the generation that I was coming from had that value. You know, peace. And some people can't get over that. A little anecdote. A little anecdote. Quick. When Krishna Leela was still working with the Board of Education, she had a supervisor named Priscilla. And Priscilla had like this attitude about the Hare Krishna people were just cop-out people, because she was one of these, you know, during the anti-war era, Chuck Green remembers, I'm sure, you know, the anti-establishment, the military-industrial complex and all that rhetoric that's like, and these people that are just taking advantage of, you know, dumb people that are like sheep and getting chewed up by this, you know, evil, you know, the right-wing group of people. So she had an attitude that we weren't, you know, out there fighting against the military-industrial complex. We were out banging tambourines and singing. It's just cop-out people. She really, you know. So when she found out that Krishna Leela was taking up Krishna consciousness, she went through the roof. How can you do this? These people, blah, blah, blah. Through Krishna Leela's association, she turned around. Because she exhibited, not like arguing or persuading, just by example. By being, you know, a transcendentalist in the workplace. And then when Priscilla had a calamity, she went to Krishna Leela. My husband is diagnosed with cancer, and I'm having a very difficult time processing my emotions. You're always very peaceful. Is there something that you would recommend for me? Okay, thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki Jai.